When the whole family comes together to watch the game, nobody wants to miss a second of the action to run to the grocery store. With Instacart, you can get all your weekly groceries in as fast as an hour. Less time shopping means more game time. Let's go. Visit Instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Noah, how you been?
Dak, I've been great. I find it interesting that you phrase it in the sense that the Suns lost game one instead of the Clippers winning game one. I just find that fascinating.
Well, yes, some idiots that host the radio show predicted that the Suns were going to sweep the Clippers, so I guess that's the way that I'm going to justify it.
I see. Yes, the truth comes out. No, I'm all good, man. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Appreciate you having me.
So not that we needed the reminder, but when you don't see someone play because of injury, kind of out of sight, out of mind, we all know how much a killer Kawhi Leonard is in the postseason when he's on the court. These last two games, clearly, Kawhi Leonard has been wonderful.
He has, but honestly, this was something that's been brewing for most of the season, and really since he started playing legitimate minutes. You know, I know a lot of people don't get a chance to fully see him the way that he's been since January 8th. That's really around the date where he started playing 36.2 minutes a game. And in those 36.2 minutes per game, Kawhi Leonard was averaging all NBA-type numbers, 27.3 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, shooting 53-47-90 splits from the field. I mean, that's ridiculous efficiency. He's given it to you on both ends of the floor defensively. And to your point, he turns it up to another gear, another level, come postseason. And I know everybody likes to talk about those special magical words, as Ron Lue, the head coach, would call them, the LM words, load management. But this is what Kawhi gears up for. This is what, in theory, he saves up for. He knows that he needs to play maximum minutes for maximum effort the entire time he's on the floor. And we saw it through the first two games, you know, 38 performance in game one where he was truly unstoppable on both ends of the floor. And then 31 last night in the loss where he was just trying to will his team to a victory in a game that they just weren't shooting all that well. So you're seeing one of the best killers. I love the word you used, one of the best closers in the NBA. And you're seeing him in his, so to speak, happy place so far in the postseason again.
Even though the Suns won last night, I wasn't all that impressed with them, because even with the way that they didn't show up in game one, I thought it'd be a much different effort right out of the gate in the first half. What have the Clippers through two games done so well that has kind of thrown the Suns off a bit?
Yeah, you know, Zach, I think that it's interesting to watch these two teams because they're somewhat similar in many ways, in the sense that they've got their superstars, but they haven't had enough time on the court to really feel like they've gotten to their full potential, reached that ceiling. For Phoenix, it was just 8 games in the regular season with Kevin Durant in the fold. And what that trade has done, and I know this has been heavily talked about, it took away all that depth that the Suns have really enjoyed these last couple of years. To have Mikal Bridges, who has blossomed into what looked like a two-way stud at the NBA level, to have Cam Johnson, who is a really high-quality role player, to have a guy in Jay Crowder, who didn't play at all this year, but the last couple of seasons was instrumental in their success, and without Cameron Payne right now, who's been out these first two games with a back injury. And I think most people aren't really valuing that loss to the level it probably should. Cameron Payne's the guy who comes in and runs the second unit, and if you've watched the first two games of the series, one, Chris Paul's had to play 38-plus minutes a night, which for a guy who's just 2 weeks away from turning 38 is not ideal. And two, when he does go to the bench, they don't really have that second lead guard. It's been Devin Booker who's had to bring the ball up where maybe he's not as comfortable. It's been Landry Shamet bringing the ball up and playing heavier minutes than maybe they'd like to. So I think there are a couple of things at play right here, right now. But the main thing is that depth. And the bench for the Clippers, this is a team that's among the deepest in the NBA. And they've done it the last two games. They've outscored this Phoenix bench heavily. I think if I go back, I'd have to double-check the numbers, but I believe it's somewhere around 64-22 or something like that through two games. They've done it without Norman Powell, the league's leading bench scorer, really having a legitimate Norman Powell game. They've gotten contributions from guys like Terrence Mann and Bones Highland and Mason Plumlee. But when Norman Powell does go off, which is coming, it's inevitable, that could really turn the tide in certainly one of these games, but not the whole series.
Noah Eagle here with us. Russell Westbrook, we know he's been on a bunch of teams. He's polarizing. Game number one, it was the greatest 3 of 19 from the field shooting performance I've ever seen with the hustle plays down the stretch. And I'll tip my cap to him. I thought he played well last night. And obviously the numbers were a whole lot better from an offensive standpoint, but they don't get the win. How do you kind of describe what it's like dealing and covering Russ on a daily basis with his short time in LA?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Zach. I think that, you know, when you're not around him consistently, you get these preconceived notions just from what you hear, what you see, what you've experienced from the outside looking in. But when he was acquired and there were murmurs of him potentially being brought in once he was bought out initially, and that was just rumors at the time. But once it was confirmed, I asked two of our guys who had played with him. Obviously, Paul George and Russ have a legitimate relationship. That's a friendship. They call it a brotherhood. And you can see it. You can feel it when you're around them. But two guys that did play with Russ, both of them in Houston, were Eric Gordon and Robert Covington. And so I asked both of them what makes him such a great teammate. Because when you ask the majority of the guys he's played with, they love him. You know, I'd say aside from that last stop he had in the other LA team, everybody in Oklahoma City, everybody in Houston, everybody in Washington, they loved what he brought because of that energy. And that's what really those guys started with, was the energy. The other part was, I think, even more interesting and more telling of the type of person that he really is. When you get to him in his core, it's someone who cares deeply about not just himself, but the overall efforts of the team, especially when he's in a situation that he's enjoying and he's happy, which is the case right now. So I know Paul George made the example. When they were in Oklahoma City, he would go in that locker room, and before the season, he'd find common ground with every single person, which is not common from a guy who's winning MVPs or scoring titles every year to do. And the example I think he used was, okay, he knew Paul George loved to fish. He's, as someone who maybe didn't like to fish all that much, he was going to find a way to learn to like it, or to go out there with Paul or give it a try with him. Steven Adams from New Zealand, he said, okay, what can I learn about New Zealand? How can I be naturally inquisitive and curious and create some form of a bond just because of that common ground that I've built up? So that's the type of guy he is. He's been nothing but positive energy so far with the Clippers, and I think a lot of that has to do with Tyronn Lue and the coaching staff really empowering him just to be himself. And that's what their main message was. They said, hey, if you're doing too much, we're going to let you know. We're going to pull you from the game. But other than that, just go be you. That's why we brought you in.
Do you genuinely think now, with all the changes that have gone on throughout the years, and I get where the feelings were at the end of the Durant-Westbrook relationship in OKC. I can understand why it got to that point. But the other night, you see a video after the game of them having a little exchange in the tunnel. Do you think that relationship is good?
I think it's certainly better than it was. You know, I don't think it ever will get to the point that they'll get back to where they were in Oklahoma City. And obviously it's all speculation from the outside here, but I would say they've taken major strides. I mean, look, we're what, six and a half years removed from that decision from Kevin Durant moving on from Oklahoma City to go to Golden State. I don't know. Russ wasn't the only one who was upset about it around the NBA, but Russ has moved on. You mentioned it. Several teams since then. Kevin Durant, several teams since then. I think they've both matured just as human beings, as people. And that's the name of the game in general. I think that you know this as well as anybody. I think I know this. I think a lot of people who are around this, they understand. When you're in the public eye, it's so much harder. But these things happen in general. You know, people change, situations change, and relationships change. And so I think that there are ebbs and flows just in everyday life. I'm sure anybody listening right now could think back to a friend they had when they were young, and maybe they went through a falling out, and then a couple years later they're like, yeah, that was stupid. I think we should probably just make up, and why don't we go catch a game, go see a movie, do something together. And just like that, you're reminiscing on old times, and you feel a little bit better. You might not be the same as you were before, but you're certainly better. I think that's probably about where those two are at right now. And honestly, it was good to see that after the game last night, the two of them dapping each other up. Just felt somewhat close to old times, which is always nice.
We all know how big Noah Eagle availability is. It's unfortunate the last few years because the team the Clippers have, there's big expectations, and it just gives you the feeling that they can't reach that without Paul George on the court, and we'll see when he comes on back. If you had to make a case, though, the Clippers getting three more victories in this series, how do you make that case?
Yeah, I think it's three things. The first one is the first question you brought up. That's Kawhi Leonard. You know, it's one of the best playoff performers in the history of the NBA. When he shoots 50% or better in his career in the playoffs, his teams are 54-18. And think about that. We're talking about someone who is uber efficient, who gets to the mid-range, who picks his spots, and there's really nothing that anybody can do, even if you throw a double or a triple or a quadruple team at him. It feels like he somehow gets through and scores. And we saw that in 2019, where he had the third most clutch points of any playoff run in the history of the NBA, only behind Michael Jordan and Dirk Nowitzki. Both of those led to titles as well. So Kawhi Leonard, when you have him, you always feel like you have a chance, and even he has said that as well. I think number two is Tyronn Lue. I call him the chiropractor on the Clippers broadcast because he makes so many adjustments. That's what he does. You know, that's him in a nutshell. He loves the chess game. Yeah, and I'm excited to see what he does from game two to game three, because I think people forget quickly. 2 years ago, the Clippers were down 0-2 in the first round of Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks, who eventually last year got to the conference finals. They win that series in seven games. Then they go down 0-2, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, and the Utah Jazz, who are the top seed in the NBA. They win that series in six games. So they've been down before. This one, they actually started up, and a lot of that was because of Tyronn Lue and his ability to instill confidence and belief in his players and his game planning strategic moves. And then the third one is that bench. You know, Norman Powell, again, hasn't had that game yet through two games. Terrence Mann is a massive piece coming off there, and Phoenix just doesn't quite have the bodies. We've seen Kevin Durant and Devin Booker play 45 minutes a game through the first two games. Devin Booker missed 20 straight games with a hamstring injury this year, and Kevin Durant only played 47 of 82 with a couple of injuries. So you're asking those guys to carry a heavy, heavy load, and the Clippers just have far more bodies they can throw at them.
No, Iga, I saw the video yesterday of Paul George getting some work in with Brian Shaw before shoot-around. What's the latest? What can you tell us about the health status of Paul George?
Yeah, definitely progressing, and that's really the best news you could get, considering what it looked like the injury was when he first went down. You know, I was doing the game, and when you saw it even live, it made you almost squeamish, and then you saw the replay, and it looked way worse. And so the initial diagnosis being what it was a massive win. But to see him out there already running, cutting, defensive slides, shooting the basketball, doing all the things that he did, that was great. It's unlikely he plays in this series, but I would say if they could get through, it feels much, much more likely that he'd get a chance to get back out there. And that's really what the team's motivation is right now, especially from Russell Westbrook and from Kawhi Leonard. Both of them had mentioned, hey, we're a little extra motivated to win this series because if we feel like we get PG back, anything goes, and that's certainly the case in the NBA postseason. And when you got a guy that talented, forget it. You certainly have a chance in any series you're in.
I know you said unlikely that he plays this series, but if it gets to a Game 7 on April 29th, it's 10 days away, you think there's a shot at least that he could play?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously with my extensive medical background, I would go deep into the navels and the canals of what could happen. I would say, again, it's still probably unlikely, but I wouldn't rule it out. I just think that that's a dude that's incredibly diligent. He's been through some really traumatic and crazy injuries over the course of his career and has somehow bounced back stronger every single time. So if there's anyone who knows how to attack his rehab the correct way, it's Paul George, and we'll see if potentially he can make it happen.
We know that you want the Clippers to win this series, clearly, so you keep on calling games. You do a great job on the Clippers radio network. But let me just ask you this. When you watch Phoenix in the first two games, it's not been pretty. Do you see a team that is a year away? I know that kind of seems like a silly question to ask just because they have so much talent and so much elite talent. But like you said, there was only eight regular season games with Kevin Durant.
Yeah, you know, I'm not quite sure. I do think that's a team that has all the makings. I think anybody can tell you that. And certainly postseason basketball, you don't necessarily need the depth. It just can come in handy over the course of a long run. And that's why so many people are so impressed by the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks and maybe the Clippers or the Denver Nuggets or whoever else, because their benches come in and they provide an extra spark or an extra boost. And just doesn't quite feel like Phoenix has that now. They get Cameron Payne back at some point. That'll help a lot. It's another scoring option off the bench, someone who can run the show, who can handle the basketball. That's big. Just having that and having a security blanket is almost necessary. But I do think they've got all the pieces. And I really think the main thing for them, Zach, and I know it sounds so simple, and it probably is when it's all said and done. And a lot of times I think teams try to overcomplicate stuff when they get superstars and add them with other superstars. But the simplest thing that they can do is just give the ball to Kevin Durant and let him be Kevin Durant. And I think we saw that a little bit more in game two than we did in game one. Game one, it looked like they're trying to run their offense a little bit more, get everybody a touch, get everybody involved. And Durant kind of fell in the back seat a little bit. In the second quarter yesterday when the Clippers went up 13, they said, oh, wait a second, we have Kevin Durant on our team? Yeah, just go. Yeah, KD, you can have it. And every single time down the floor, he was cooking. He was getting in the mid-range. He's knocking down shots, getting to the free throw line. I think once they figure that out, it's going to really open things up, not just for him, but for everybody else. So that's what I'm waiting on, and we'll see if the Clippers can stop them in their tracks before they can finally find it.
One thing, though, Eagle, outside of this series, it's impossible to argue against it. I didn't think the suspension was necessary, but with his past, I see why the NBA did what they did. How did you react to the NBA suspending Draymond for game three?
Yeah, I think that you're probably spot on. Look, the playoffs in general are already high stakes, high emotion, and I think we saw that play out between those two players. Sabonis clearly grabbed him down low, but if you're Draymond Green, you've been in this situation so many times over the course of your career, and so many times it's ended this way as a result, to your point, because of all the buildup from really a body of work. And so I think it was a combination of things. It's that, and then it's the fact that after the stomp occurred, he egged the crowd on. He played to them. It was almost, it felt like it was WWE in some sense. I think if he had remained calm after the fact, if he had maybe stuck it through, considering Adam Silver was in the building, he would have had a chance. But that was probably what sealed his fate, and I'll be curious how Golden State responds without him. He's such a big part of what they do on both ends of the floor. And with Sacramento playing with a lot of confidence right now, if that goes to 3-0, that could be very, very interesting in the Western Conference.
Well, enjoy this run here for the Clippers. And I know this is your last year doing the Clippers games on the radio before the new big gig with NBC calling college football. Congratulations on that. And really do appreciate you joining us here for a few moments.
Zach, appreciate you, man. You know I give you a hard time, but it's all love as always. Love what you guys do, and we'll do it again.
Hey, I just
want
to make sure I still get the Eagle holiday card. I haven't got one in the last few years.
Yeah, no. I need to let you know there's no holiday card period anymore. I think what happened is when I reached a certain age. Yeah. When I reached a certain age, my mom goes, "Oh, you're not cute anymore. We can't do this now. It's just creepy."
Yeah, so I look forward to that every year. At least how funny you and your dad are, like, at least, like, send a few jokes out or something, all right?
Yeah, listen, we can maybe try to write a few joke books and do that instead as a gift, but as for the card, it's done. It's all done.
Noah, you're the best. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Zach, you got it, man.